from the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. What a day. It's me, Anna DeVlantis. A lot going on here in Chicago. Something about to happen, we're told, in Littleton, Colorado, with former Governor Rod Blagojevich. That's where he's being held. President Trump, if you've been listening to WGN Radio, you've heard he's commuting the sentence of Rod Blagojevich. Could be free pretty soon here, even back in Chicago, as the TV stations are all camped outside Patty
Blagojevich's
house.
Well, the word is that he's not only said he's done it, he's actually signed the papers.
Signed
it. So it's a done deal.
Done deal. How about that? You know, he mentioned it in that fundraiser when he was here, that high dollar fundraiser here at the Trump Hotel a couple months ago, back late October, I believe, when he sort of surveyed the crowd. Remember this, the reporting on this? And he asked, should I pardon him? Should I commute his sentence? And there were cheers. And he says, I'm thinking about doing it before the election. So top of his mind, the president has spoken out about it a number of times. And now it has happened. So we're waiting to get more details about that.
You know, the thing about it, too, is that the people who held him back last time were the congressional Republicans in Illinois.
Right.
So I'm just, in fact, checking Darren LaHood's Twitter feed here to see if he said anything yet, because he was pretty vocal about it, but nothing yet. It'll be interesting to see what the Republicans have to say about this. It's one of those weird things where people are on all different sides on this
strange
issue.
Strange bedfellows, right? One of those politics strange bedfellows. You know, I don't know what you see, but a lot of people I've talked with, and I would put myself in this category, have been in the camp that 14 years seemed like a lot of time for Rod Blagojevich, even when you compared him to other high-profile politicians who've come through. Remember, Blagojevich took no bribes, no money. You could argue he was trying to personally benefit from selling the Senate seat, the most salacious of the charges. But recall that most of the charges related to that were tossed out, considered political log rolling and the business of doing politics, that those were not, there's a technicality in the jury instructions and all that. We're going to have legal experts talk about that later on the show. But that most of those charges related to selling the Senate seat were tossed out. And when you compare Rod Blagojevich to Aaron Schock, former congressman, or former Congressman Jesse Jackson, both of them accused of using their campaign funds as their political campaign funds as piggy banks, personal piggy banks. Both of them, one spent no time in jail, the other about 2 years. And then you look at that 14-year sentence, which I think struck a lot of people, no matter what you felt about the governor or how badly you viewed those crimes.
You know, he couldn't help himself.
That's it.
And I did an interview with him after his book. And then after that, we spent probably 20 minutes talking. It was Matt Bubala, who works here, myself, and the former governor. And I was just astounded by the things he was saying and the language he was using and the personal things he was saying about other people in leadership. I didn't know him from Adam. I mean, we barely knew each other. And he just sort of had that. He brought that with him no matter where he went. He couldn't sort of appear contrite before the judge or anything like that. And I just think that really hurt him.
I think it ultimately did play into the whole process. And Karen Conti is going to be here along with one of the former attorneys for Rod Blagojevich, who's been with him there since he started to appeal this whole thing and tried to show some sense of what you're talking about. It was a little more later in that appellate process, a little more like had more of an I'm sorry sort of an approach to the whole thing. Tell us your thoughts, though. What do you think about it? 847, at the end of the day, Rob is a human being. I believe he even taught a class while in prison, so God bless him. I just want to mention, too, before I forget to tell you, we do have a familiar face, familiar voice here in Chicago, longtime NBC5 sportscaster Mike Adamley, former Chicago Bear. He's here, along with his wonderful wife, Kim. They're going to join me in studio and talk about Mike's personal battle with CTE and dementia. They were the subject of a documentary last night on NBC Sports. He's been very public with his battles, and he has a lot to say, a lot to share. So that is coming up. But let's get to Ryan Burrow now. He's been covering it. He's the first person who came in the newsroom and came across all of our offices today and said, hey, guys, I think this might be happening today, the commutation of the sentence of former Governor Rod Blagojevich, and it did happen, didn't it, Ryan?
Yeah, it did, and I just checked up on the Federal Bureau of Prisons website. Rod Blagojevich, register number 40892-424, still listed as being located at FCI Englewood, so his release has not happened yet. At least the website hasn't been updated yet. This could be a little bit of a process for him to actually leave the facility, so we'll see kind of the timeline of all of that. that. But, you know, this has played out over several months. We've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. You know, the president has essentially kind of dangled this in front of the Blagojevich family as a possibility for several months now, well over a year. And back in August, he spoke aboard Air Force One about the possibility of commutation, saying that the sentence wasn't fair and that, you know, he was thinking about the daughters of Rod Blagojevich and his wife. He said he didn't know the guy very well, even though he did appear on Celebrity Apprentice in 2010, but he seemed like a nice guy. He kind of repeated that today while preparing to board Air Force One again, that same kind of line, saying that he thought it was unfair. He brought up the unfair sentence and who was behind it all. So he made that decision finally.
Yeah, he did. And ultimately, that has happened. So what happens next is really unclear, right? Because he's in Littleton, Colorado. We've called them. They say that there's going to be some sort of announcement at the end of the day, which presumably explains how everything will happen from here.
It sounds like it's up to the Federal Bureau of Prisons now as far as how this will take place. Knowing the former governor as we have before, he likes to do things very publicly. So I would expect that we'll be hearing his voice at some point. We just don't know about this process. Will that be in Colorado? Will it be back home in Illinois? We just don't know.
You got to think that Patty Blagojevich and the kids, now grown, are going to be extremely excited to see him, and this news to them is welcome. I always feel, and I know Patty was on the tapes and people criticize her for varying degrees of what her knowledge of everything was and how she might or might not have been involved, but you think about the family in a case like this, and I do, and I just feel as if that's, you know, it's going to be an emotional day for them. I think you're right, though. We'll start hearing a lot more from Rod Blagojevich. I don't know that he's going to just sort of go quietly into his home. I think he is someone who will speak out about the injustices that he feels have been against him in this whole process.
We don't know what's changed either from the time the president first started speaking about this possibility to today. I mean, what was it that made up that mind? And, you know, part of it was, why do you keep dangling this out there? Just do it. You know, if you're gonna commute his sentence, just do it instead of, you know, kind of leaving the family in the lurch for several months.
Well, I think Rod, one theory is very political. I mean, you know, Roger Stone is being sentenced this week, and he's being sentenced. The federal guidelines initially said a recommendation was 7 to 9 years. The president thought that was excessive. Whether you like Rod Blagojevich or not, I think a lot of people think that the federal sentence for him was excessive. So drawing attention to that in the days before Roger Stone is sentenced, that comes on Thursday, you know, I think helps the president build his case against his own Justice Department.
Right. He's been highly critical in the Roger Stone case about the sentencing. He's been highly critical of the sentencing in the Rod Blagojevich case. The timing of it, I think you can bring that, call it into question. However, President Trump has been talking about this particular idea for some time, right? He's been mentioning the possibility of commuting or pardoning him for some time. And we want to get to the difference between the two, because I know that is, there's some legal specifics that we want to get to. And Karen Conti, attorney Karen Conti, is on the phone here. We're going to get to her. But first, we're going to pause for a second here on WGN. More to come at 1:15. Anna DeVellante is here. 1:18, we've been talking about Blagojevich, his sentence commuted by President Trump, and many people were asking, well, what's the difference between a presidential pardon and a commutation? We have just the person to answer that question. Attorney Karen Conti is here. Hey, Karen.
Hi, Anna.
So that is the question. So his sentence is commuted. He's not pardoned. Please explain to us what that means.
Sure. Clemency 101. So clemency is the parent kind of branch of this. Commutation is the lessening of a sentence, either in duration or severity. So you see a case where someone gets the death penalty and it's commuted to life. That is commutation of the severity of a sentence. In this case, it's going to be the duration of the sentence. He's going to take his 14-year sentence and cut it short. Pardon is a full power to forgive that comes from the Constitution. The president is able to say that basically we're forgiving you of this crime. We're going to forego all other punishments and prevent new prosecutions from occurring. So it's a more global resolution. In a commutation, the president could still make Blagojevich do his parole or pay his fines or to meet other criteria that he selects. So that's the difference.
I got you.
So that's the difference. Commutation is an ending and a lessening of a sentence, whereas a pardon is more of a forgiveness of the entire crime.
Okay, and we have just I know you've been just have a minute or two here because you have a busy day today, Karen, and this is just an unannounced, you know, weighing in for us, and we appreciate that. But we have several listeners wondering the fact that Blagojevich seemed to mock the justice system in their view, or at least speak out publicly against what they were doing. Does that count against you when you're ultimately sentenced?
Yes, it can, because the judge can take into account that you haven't been remorseful for your crimes. And one of the things that a judge has to do is to make sure that person, when he gets out, is not going to do it again. If he's not remorseful and doesn't understand what he did and is not taking responsibility, the judge can certainly say, well, I need to sentence him accordingly. And I don't think it helped that Blagojevich was mouthy. On the other hand, it may have worked in his favor with President Trump. And think about this. President Trump was just impeached and he was acquitted. And the allegations were that he was using his position to get political advantage. Well, that's pretty much what Blagojevich was accused and convicted of. So you could see that President Trump could seriously think, well, he did exactly what I did, and I was unwrongly charged, and I was unwrongly convicted. And I don't mean convicted, I mean impeached. And maybe felt for him and said, you know, there but for whatever, go I.
Yeah, certainly seems that he did feel strongly for him in his situation. He spoke out publicly about that on a number of occasions. Karen Conti, thank you. Always appreciate hearing
from
you. Well, you know him as a longtime respected sportscaster at NBC5. I had the honor and pleasure of working with you there for some time. Mike Adamley, former Bear as well. His wife Kim is here with him because you're dealing with a very personal issue and you've been very public about it, I'd imagine, thinking that it may help other people. I know you've been so candid about it. I've had a couple of chances to talk to you about it. Mike, you're dealing with CTE, you're dealing with dementia, and there was a documentary last night on NBC Comcast Sports, or NBC Sports, I should say, profiling what you're going through. And I just want to ask you, how are you feeling, Mike?
I'm going to say I don't feel good. I'm good. I'm sitting here talking to you.
Ah, well, that's
with
a great thing.
With my wife, the sun's shining outside. That's pretty good.
You've always been a positive person, and that's one of the things I appreciate. Both of you. Actually, Kim, you've always sort of, you've been there, and you've been very open about everything you're going through. How are you feeling? How are things going for you both?
our mission, if you know, in this whole thing, is to shed light on what CTE truly is. And so that means the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so we try to be transparent. So to be honest, it is rough. It is rough. It's a lot to handle. But the good side is, you just heard Mike.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I get to live with. This is my inspiration. He is always upbeat.
She's also been to hell and back. So
yeah. Well, it sounds like you've been through a lot yourself. And I know we worked together when I was doing weekends at NBC, and you were a sportscaster on the weekends, and you were always so positive and had such energy that you ignited the entire team. That's who you are. You have a background in professional sports, and now you look back. Do you have a CTE diagnosis? I thought that really can't happen definitively, or has that changed?
Well, Kim is better at explaining this, but basically, I've had epilepsy. I had to leave the show one night. I was on the air, and I had this, you know, this big wave to start. Part of me was like, I was cut in half. Part of me was talking about the Bulls beating the Portland Trail Blazers and Michael Jordan scored 32 points. And while that was happening, I just kind of like felt this wave coming in. And the next thing I knew, I was in my office and I wanted to see what happened. My shirt was dripping wet. So I went to a neurologist, and Larry Wirt was on the, you know,
yeah, former
help me find
manager,
the person, and Kim.
Former.
And then I was. The neurologist has since passed away, but he said after going through the test, he said you have something that's a lesion on your left temporal hemisphere, and basically it was, you know,
it's caused from football, football injury.
Consistent.
He just thought it was that. It's probably
So then, when you heard this.
And that was in 1999. And then Mike is, you know, has been treated by a neurologist consistently. And he said several, you know, intensive inpatient, you know, hospital stays where they've done the complete neurological workup. And it was in January of 16, after one of these days that his neurologist told him that he had all the symptoms commensurate with what we know about CTE. And so you're right, we cannot definitively diagnose it at this point. There's no consensus on biomarkers yet, but we do know that the stages, we know the symptoms, we know the history of repetitive hits to the head that predispose one to this. So we always say probable, because that's the most that we can do at this point, but that's the medical a diagnosis for Mike at this point.
And the CTE, can it cause other things? Is that what you're told? What happens as a result of it other than the symptoms just from CTE?
Well, CTE goes through a series of stages, as I mentioned. And what's tough about CTE is that the onset of it doesn't start to show up until about 10 to 15 years after the initial trauma. And that's because what happens with all the repetitive blows is that you're killing brain cells. And those dead cells and then the taus are released, they tangle, they kill more cells. And eventually enough brain tissue is destroyed where it starts to show up in your functioning and your behavior. So the guys will start to experience short-term memory loss, lack of focus. Then they'll start to have personality changes with rage and aggression, impulsivity, poor decision-making. And those escalate. And then the final stage is dementia, where enough of the brain tissue's been destroyed. And dementia is an overall term, you know, that speaks to loss of cognitive functioning. With CTE, we know that there's often other conditions comorbid, like Mike has epilepsy.
Mm-hmm. That's linked to the CTE.
Well,
is that possible?
Most probably. You know, Mike mentioned the lesion that he had, and any trauma to the brain can cause seizures, and any seizure condition is termed epilepsy. So, and often when you have brain trauma, you're going to have seizures. So, epilepsy goes hand in hand with many brain trauma conditions, CTE being one of them.
And we have a listener asking, what is CTE? Because we're just being presumptuous by saying, thinking everyone knows. We often hear about it associated with football and competitive sports.
Mike, you say the whole term for me. You're better at this than me.
What does it stand
chronic
for?
Chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I practice that a lot. I can get it out. But it is, as Kim was messing, it goes across the board. It is, they're finding out like competitive, you know, hits to the head, repetitive hits to the head. And it happens not just in sports. People who have had traumatic brain injury, almost, you know, God knows how many, you know, wounded warriors there are. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, women's from the women's championship, soccer champions,
mm-hmm.
have sent their brains to Boston. So there's a lot of people who are worried about it. There's a lot of, you know, players, and no matter what the sport is, hockey, they're worried about it. That, you know, maybe someday this might happen to me. I want to, you know, be there, you know, for my kids and stuff like that. But
and I think this is an important point, Mike, that you brought up, because often, you know, we hear CTE and it's just associated right now with NFL players, you know,
right.
Retired.
Very closely so.
And we've seen it most in them, and that's an extreme condition. But I read a statistic just recently where it's something like they're estimating 230,000 veterans are experiencing traumatic brain injuries, which may or may not, you know, include CTE. And besides them, then there are survivors of domestic abuse or child abuse are experiencing this. So this is potentially a huge wave things of conditions in
very
our society.
Very wide ranging, and the things you don't necessarily think about.
Exactly. And all the more reason why, you know, we try to get the word out there. If you're experiencing these things, we hear of the suicides, you know, with the celebrities and the stars, you know, in sports, but there are a lot of people who contact us who are experiencing this. They don't know what to do.
Yeah.
They don't know who to go to.
Kim and Mike, can you stick around just for a minute here? We're gonna stop here and pause, but then we're going to come back and talk a little more about the work you're doing and what's happening with you. And we have a clip of something from the documentary as well to share with our listeners here on WGN. It's 1:30, and it's time for the news at the bottom of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. My guests here in studio, Mike Adamly, longtime NBC5 sportscaster, former Chicago Bear, and his wonderful wife, Kim. come to know you both a little bit. I saw you in a couple of hospital waiting rooms with my husband was dealing with some treatments, and you were getting some treatments, and we all were hanging out, and you have been getting some treatments, and some of them, I think, successfully. I want to talk about that. But we have a little clip of Mike back in the day. You may know him from his sportscaster fame days. You may know him from his Chicago Bear running back days. You may know him from the Northwestern Wildcats too. Go Cats!
Don't forget American Gladiators.
That's the clip we have. Here it is. I loved you on that show. Loved you on that show. Here it is.
Welcome everyone. I'm Mike Battlemley to another edition of the American Gladiators. John Rambo, eat your heart out. It's a game of quickness, agility, and then it's across this set of commando lines, which were made for Wilt Chamberlain, not a guy who's 5'9". Okay, baby, come on! Oh. Now, for a contender to win this, he's got to be quick, he's got to be agile, and he's got to be in a lot better shape than I am. Todd?
You seen the video from that?
Oh, it's amazing. You're going through all these American Gladiator challenges. Oh my, seemed like so much fun. So much fun. And I remember we trained for Hustle Up the Hancock together.
That's coming up this coming Sunday. So we've got a group of about
just about 30 runners.
Yeah, 20. Team Adamly.
That's awesome. You're still doing it. It's amazing. It is amazing.
Those people have been very good for us, you know, for a long time.
Yeah.
Respiratory mm-hmm. of Greater Chicago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've been just... So it's fun to be able to do something like that and, you know, have people on the team. And that's the one thing that you know, Kim will tell you, if they took that away from me, I'd be really in pretty bad shape, depression and otherwise. But to stay as close to, you know, doing sports and things that are part of who you are, mm-hmm. and so you don't lose that part of it, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, your passion, your sense of belonging, all that. You've always been involved in charity organizations, too. That's one of the things I think anybody in the media business will know about Mike Adamly, is that you were always giving back. You were showing up whenever anybody asked you, hey, can you MC this or appear here? You're like, yes, 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 tell me where to go. That's who you are as well. And now you have an organization that is helping others with CTE, people who are dealing with it, because the brotherhood and sisterhood of kind of connecting with others must really help.
And that's the first thing that when the doctor told Mike, you have all the signs that we know to be commensurate with CTE. We're sitting at Rush Medical Center in the hospital room. Mike's still in the hospital bed. And literally the first words out of his mouth were, well, if I have to have this, and I'm going to be the one to show how to live with it. And that's his goal. You know, your life isn't over. You can still have a good, meaningful life. Here are the things you do that you can do to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, you've also been active about talking about making the game safer. A lot of attention. We talked about there are many sports affected by CTE, but football often named, and that's your sport. That's what you played professionally. You are speaking out about that, making the game safer.
Well, I think everybody's speaking about that. If you have a professional football team and you lose, you know, one of your players because of a big hit across the middle, if you're a tight end or a wide receiver, there's a lot. Those things just pile up after a while. And I think that the league's doing everything they can in its power to make the game a little bit safer. But I don't think you can, because it's like evolution, you know, mass times acceleration equals force. Guys are bigger, guys are faster. They are doing something with the treatment that I get over at
the Neurologic Wellness Center.
Yeah, they have all kinds of things to find out where you are. Anyway, things that can help cognitive functioning, and part one of those things is. They tested me, and this, I said, this is how it could help football. They tested your peripheral vision, you know, and some people's is just like this. But if you can improve somebody's peripheral vision, I can now see a quarterback and see a guy coming, like, across the middle and not get hit by it, because he can get duck out of the way or sidestep or something. So there's a lot of,
You want to see it get safer.
I've seen it myself, and it's hard to say, I wouldn't do it all over again. Maybe I wouldn't, but I made a lot of who I am is because of playing football.
And I think the main thing with that, just like, you know, you said at the treaters at the Neurologic Wellness Institute, you know, including it's to avoid getting hit is the main thing.
But how do you do that in a game of football? That's what it always traces back to. And, you know, you just think, do you stop having your kid play football? This is the debate you hear going on all the time in families all across Chicago and everywhere.
I would just lay out the facts and the figures. And this is, you know, it's if I'm coming out of college today and somebody offers me a, you know, signing bonus of $500,000 and we'll give you, you know, a two-year deal worth, you know, $1 million and $1.5 million. I'm not going to turn that down.
It's hard to turn.
It's hard. You can take care of your family, your family's family, and you can help people all over, whatever.
But what you can do as a parent, I mean, what we want to do is eliminate. It's the cumulative repetitive hits. So the later that we start the boys playing,
or
girls in sports, there are many other sports that involve that. The later that you start with tackle football, for instance, the better off you're going to be. There are a lot of other. I'm a school psychologist, so I know about, you know, brain development and how it, things with learning and cognition and so the young developing brain is more at risk, and so you want to avoid younger children being exposed to hits to the head. They can still get everything positive that football has to offer or any other sport without getting hit in the head. Mm-hmm. And that's the main goal.
Are you having a lot of other families reach out to you since you've had this documentary era? You've been very public in the media.
Long before the documentary.
Long before, I know.
Kim was part of, on Facebook, NFL Wives group that has grew start with a very meager number of people, like 24, and then now you can finish off the...
You become involved with others who might also have CTE? Are you connecting with each other?
There's an NFL wives group on Facebook. It's a private group. Mm-hmm. And I've been a part of that now for about 3.5-4 years.
Right.
And, yeah, it's over 2,500 wives. And so, yeah, we share stories. You know, we're in the trenches. We know what's going on. We experience it firsthand. It's hard to explain how CTE completely changes the person. It changes them into a man that they're not and behaviors that they would never, ever do before.
773, I remember Mike with the biggest smile of all the sportscasters. You rock, Mike. I'm just a fan. That's very cool because there are a lot of fans out there. And I think when someone like you is so candid about working through this kind of battle, that it can be very, it can be helpful to so many
others.
Well,
you know what? I look at the 20 years since 2000, you know, and it's amazing that there are so many people that, you know, say what you're saying. But because I mean, I got fired by Larry Ward twice and hired twice. I have run the gamut of, you know, highs and lows.
Sure.
But Larry's been by your side. You know, that was when you were first starting to, you know, show signs of CTE. We know now, you know, his brain just wasn't working right. I remember Larry saying to me, I don't get it. You know, when Mike is on, he's like fantastic. But every once in a while, something comes up out of nowhere. It's like, what is going on?
So that's the thing. You were broadcasting and something was going on. When did it come to you that there was something medical, that this was something bigger than just sort of every once in a while having a brain fart?
Like I said, that singular moment, it happened before, but I was embarrassed to tell her this, you know, and I forgot Allison Rosati's name, and I said, I need help, because it was...
But the doctors didn't know then.
They didn't.
I remember talking to Mike's neurologist. You know, we said, you know, he's been treated since 1999 with epilepsy, and I remember calling the neurologist and saying, you know, Mike is doing this or not doing this, or he can't do this, or this is really weird. And the doctor's saying, he's fine. You have to stop doing for him. And I'm like, no, you don't get it. If he can't do this, if I don't do this, he can't do it. And these odd, you know, occurrences of behavior just keep increasing with frequency and intensity until you see the pattern. Now we know the things to look for. But back then they didn't know. So even if you went to the doctor, they didn't know what was going on.
No, they didn't. Well, I just want to thank you for continuing to put the spotlight on this and being so public and trying to help others. Kim and Mike, is there a place where if someone's listening right now and they might want to connect with you, how they can do
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Mike has started an initiative to reach out to people. You can Google the Mike Adamley Project, Rise Above, and or go to mikeadamley.org. The other thing that's important is we are a part of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, and we have a helpline. So you can Google CFL Helpline or go to concussionlegacy.org, and you can get the help that you need or get your questions answered.
That is, it's good to know because it seems there is more help now, maybe not enough help yet, but there is more help, and there are people to connect with that can help you through this battle. Have you found that even in the time that you've been dealing with it?
Oh, absolutely.
Resources.
Absolutely.
Are they there?
And that's what we're trying to build. What can you do? When the doctor told Mike he could only offer just like take a vitamin B12, keep working as long as you can, and that's it. So I mentioned I was a school psychologist and I was a university professor, so I researched like crazy. And we put together a program of nutrition and exercise, socialization, and cognitive stimulation.
Hmm.
And it worked. After 2 years of doing this, they did another brain study, and Mike had not lost any overall brain volume.
And
the CTE keeps on, but you can promote neurogenesis to promote new growth.
That is so good to hear.
There are things you can do.
Mike, thank you. Thank you both for being here, Mike and Kim Adamley.
You were effusive in your praise of me. I felt the same way about you in terms of your energy and your kindness.
Thank you, Mike. You're a positive guy, and I just, I love you, man. I'm feeling for you, and thank you for turning this into something to help others. I just, that's a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing. Mike and Kim Adamley, our guests, and you now know where to find them. We'll also try to put something up on WGNradio.com. More to come. In Atlantis here on WGN, it's 1:47 on this Tuesday. We're continuing to track the developments with President Trump commuting the sentence of former Governor Rod Blagojevich. A lot of things happening there, including when does he get out? He's in Littleton, Colorado after 8 years. And now, does he get out tomorrow? I don't know if we're hearing anything in the news department on that, but we're waiting word to see what happens next.
No guidance yet. Don't know for sure, but the president says it's a done deal.
It's a done deal. That's it. So we are also trying to get the attorney for Rod Blagojevich, one of his attorneys. He's had many over the years. The person who handled his appeal to call into the show as well with thoughts on that, what that's going on. And of course, top and bottom of the hour here on WGN Radio, we'll track all of the developments as they see fit. They'll even break into programming if something big happens. But right now, I want to turn our attention to Wanda James. Wanda James is the first African-American cannabis dispensary owner in the U.S. She's also the first in Chicago and very involved in this. And we just want to welcome you to the program. Wanda, thanks for checking in here on WGN.
Well, thank you. I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to speak with everybody.
So you served in the Navy. That was your background. You were in marketing and sales. You were at Fortune 100 companies. And then you took this turn and woo, now you're on you're selling cannabis. Tell us your story. It's amazing.
Now. Well, you know, and it's funny because everything that I've ever done in my life has prepared me for this moment, right? You know, I mean, nothing was harder than the military until we did cannabis. My background in politics has shown me how you have to bring coalitions of people together to make something big happen. And then, quite frankly, you know, going back to the military and Fortune 100 companies being mostly male dominated, you know, you've got to be, you know, ready to take on the battle and you know, fight like a lady. So it's been good.
So when you initially decided, tell me about that moment, because you were successful in marketing and you were working in that kind of field of these big companies. And then you decided at some point, you know what, I'm going to check out this cannabis field. This might be some kind of a good deal here. I mean, what happened there, Wanda?
Well, so I was on this guy you may know, recognize the name. I was on Barack Obama's National Finance Committee in 2007 and 2008. And I was also the campaign manager for Congressman Jared Polis in 2008, who is now Governor Jared Polis of Colorado. So coming off of both of these political campaigns, we knew that cannabis was going to be given the opportunity to be legal on the state level. And quite frankly, my brother was arrested when he was 17 or 18 years old for about $160 worth of cannabis, about 4 ounces of cannabis. And he was given a 10-year prison sentence. And four of those 10 years, my black brother spent every day picking 100 pounds of cotton to purchase his freedom in Texas.
Wow.
So when I found that out, yeah, I know, gasp, right? And always say it twice because people need to hear that a black boy was given the sentence of picking 100 pounds of cotton a day to purchase his freedom. Hmm. When I found that out, I became incensed and sickened, and I wanted to understand how that would happen in America. And that is strictly about America's desire for a slave labor force and privatized prison systems. Most of the Fortune 500 companies have used privatized prison labor to, quite frankly, expand their bottom line. Mm-hmm. Imagine for those folks out there that own businesses, if you only had to pay your employees a dollar a day or 20 cents an hour, how profitable would your bottom line become?
Yeah.
And that's what happened to my brother. And then when I took his case to an attorney to say, is this true? Because in Colorado, where I grew up in mostly white society, I didn't know anybody that was ever arrested for the use of cannabis. I knew it was illegal, but no one ever got arrested. University of Colorado, we would smoke weed all day and no one had anything to say about it. Mm-hmm. So for me and my husband, we wanted to put a black face on cannabis, and we wanted to make our dispensary, our cultivation facility, and our edible company the most political in cannabis. And we wanted to talk about these issues surrounding mass incarceration, privatized prison systems, slave labor, and the targeting of black and brown communities to be able to fulfill slave labor and mass incarceration.
Well, you're certainly calling attention to it because you've been on every business magazine or everybody's interviewing you because you are really the, it's at a time when it's becoming legalized in more and more places, and it just became legal here in Illinois. There mm-hmm. were immediately calls about the inequities of the system, that we really had no minorities who had any dispensaries, and how could this happen? Part of the explanation was that the medical dispensaries got the first crack at it because they had invested so much and had paid these exorbitant fees and setup costs, and that they had put so much in it that they got the first crack at the recreational marijuana piece of it. But then you looked at it and everyone thought, this doesn't seem quite right. There isn't a single minority owning a dispensary. That's not right either. So enter Wanda James, and you've been very active here in Illinois as well.
I have been, and I've had the great, great pleasure to work with Representative Kelly Cassidy and Tori Hutchison, recently having the opportunity to work with the incredible Mayor Lori Lightfoot in making all of this happen. And let me say that's what makes – what happens in cannabis is medical marijuana will always be the first – folks to get the shot at the recreational side. And everywhere that cannabis has become legal, the footprint looks like this. Medical marijuana for 2 years, somewhere in that two-year portion, the vote goes to the people or to the legislature to be able to legalize, and legalization usually happens in the fourth year after medical marijuana passes. The reason why medical marijuana dispensary owners or medical marijuana license owners get first shot at recreational is because during medical marijuana, and let me be very clear, medical marijuana as a business is a losing proposition. It does not make money. But it does let the people, the public, understand that the sky won't fall, that for the most part there will be less underage use, people will be helped, and those businesses are usually first in line to get the recreational licenses because they are already in existence. And once recreational happens is when you see the massive lines, the big uptake on people wanting to use cannabis. And so you have to have some understanding of what this is going to look like from a business standpoint, which is why the medical marijuana dispensaries and the medical marijuana license owners are usually first in line to get the recreational licenses.
Sorry, Wanda, we just have a minute more, but sum it up for us.
Well, and Illinois is doing a great job right now of ensuring that the next wave of licenses are definitely owned by black and brown people, and they're doing a very good job of making that happen.
Okay. Wanda James, where can people connect with you if they want to reach out and learn more about you and what you're doing? I mean, you're everywhere, first of all, but there might be one very focused site that we can find.
SimplyPure.com is my business. Simply Pure Dispensary here in Colorado is where we do our work. Our edibles is out there. You can also find me on Twitter at WandaLJames.com, on LinkedIn at WandaLJames, and on Facebook at WandaJames.
Thank you for your time, Wanda. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Enjoy your afternoon. 1:55 here on WGN. The news is coming up at the top of the hour from the WGN newsroom. We're continuing to track any developments with Rod Blagojevich, whose sentence has been commuted by President Trump. It's Tech Tuesday here on WGN. Anna DeVlantis here. We're talking tech with two bright minds in tech, and they have a lot to offer you, a lot of stuff they know that we need to know, all of us, and it's going to be exciting to listen to because there are some new breakthroughs in tech when it comes to your health. When you hear about wearables, we know about Fitbits and things like that, but that's just the beginning, they're saying. Some amazing things in the pipeline, the next generation is pretty cool. It'll affect our lives if you choose to use it. We've got Andrew Anacone here, managing partner at Tech Nexus, a venture capital and advisory firm investing in technology startups that are reinventing industries. So you know about the new emerging tech, isn't that right, Andrew?
It is, absolutely.
Also here with us, talking about next generation, how about securing your personal data? We hear so much about it, and I'm not sure I'm really up to speed on all this stuff in terms of my own devices and my own life, and I feel like so many people I know fall into that category. Kai Waterman scared me to death when I was talking to him. I mean, we were texting back and forth, and you were just like, how do I know it's you? I'm like, wait a minute, I'm telling you it's me. You're like, no, you should never trust that. That's the beginning. So I understand that you look at it on a very, a level where you've seen all the bad stuff out there, but that there are some things we probably should know. Right, Kai?
Yes. Thank you, Anna.
And you are, we should mention, your firm is called Mercury STK, and you're also Hub International Mergers and Acquisitions.
Yes, that's correct.
Let's get that out there. Okay, the first thing is that you mentioned when we were on the phone, and it totally freaked me out, is when you talked about how we overshare on social media. And that's true. We put everything out there. But that there are some key things people are putting out there that can be used, such as even things that I would think are pretty benign, like birth dates and other stuff like that. You kind of say, hey, be careful about what you put out there.
Absolutely. So one of the major issues is a social engineering aspect. When we as a society overshare, we have a tendency to put what we think is information that others can't use against us. And in this case, a lot of firms will ask you for security questions, and they'll ask you, what is your mother's maiden name?
Very common question.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Birth dates, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But we have a tendency to put that on Facebook. We put it, on IG, things like that.
Without even thinking about it. You would say, happy birthday, mom, or hey, I spent the day with my mom. Mom's name is right next to you. So maiden name may be there next to you. And then your birthday, hey, it's my birthday today. You're celebrating your birthday. You would already know the answers to two questions.
Exactly.
And you're saying people are actually combing profiles to do this kind of thing that's happening.
Yes, absolutely. It's fairly common. One of the first steps for a bad guy is to essentially target an individual and look them up on the internet, see what they can find. If you look at celebrities, a lot of information is already out there. If you want to target a celebrity, it's fairly easy because their information is widely available. If you remember a few years back, a lot of celebrities had their phones hacked.
Yes.
Due to social engineering. Someone pretending to be them, getting the carrier to change their information on the fly because they had all the necessary information to answer those security questions.
Okay, so that is the other crime that you want to enlighten us all about, because it used to be was just identity theft that was the big one that we all were worried about, because that changes and ruins your life, and it can be such a nightmare to try to recover from that. But now they're actually trying to go in through your cell phone carriers. And with a little bit of information, tell us what they're doing, Kai.
So there's a couple steps with that. One is where they can essentially steal your SIM information. They pretend to be you. They have your carrier switch your SIM without your knowledge. And they do this by socially engineering you, pretending or manipulating to get information that is key in order for the provider to switch your cell phone service to a different SIM card. Once that's done, if you have multi-factor enabled, and typically most people do because they bank on their devices.
Multi-factor then, means you have send me a text to my cell phone to let us know it's you. They send you a code, and then you plug it into a secure website.
That is correct.
So like your bank might say, hey, how do we know it's you? We're going to send you this code. You plug it in. That's what you're talking about.
That is.
But
that
once
is
they get access to your phone, then they have access to those types of codes.
That's right. They can reset your password. They're sent the multi-auth, and then they type that in. Your password gets reset. It's sent to an email account that they own. Now they're in your environment. They're in your bank accounts. They're in, you know, your email.
What would you say? What is the best way to stop yourself from being victim to that kind of thing? What's the best advice?
My recommendation is a multi-step process. You know, you want to enable multi-factor. We've discussed that aspect about it. But you also want to be skeptical. If someone were to send you an email and it has links or an attachment, you know, identify who it came from. Is this somebody you trust? Hover over the link. Verify that link is actually going to where the display name is stating. Or better yet, if it's a link to your bank, open up a browser and type it in yourself versus clicking on the link that's in the email.
Because I've seen those before, to be descriptive about what you're talking about. When you see Apple, hey, they've sent you a security alert, just click on this link and we'll help you out. And then you hover over the Apple portion and it'll say CBD11233345, and it's not Apple. Apple has a very simple website or a very simple email address, and yet one just hovering over it sometimes can say, okay, that's not who they say they are.
That's absolutely correct.
It happens a lot.
I feel like I get those every day.
I do too. It's like, come on. And then they get more sophisticated too.
My wife calls me every day or forwards it to me and says, is this legit? And I have to say, don't click on anything.
That's always what you hear from the IT guys around here too. Don't click. We have them in the bathroom, in the stalls. They tell us, make sure you don't click on any device, any links you don't know. And I think that's true, but it's gone to a next level thing where it totally looks legit. They're borrowing names from your contact list even and sending you an email. And it seems like it may be something from somebody you know.
Yeah, phishing is a major issue across the board. It's something that corporates, hire services to prevent. So the average person, that doesn't have these tools are at a disadvantage because of that.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to tell us, Kai, about protecting ourselves or things that you have seen that people probably aren't doing that we should be doing?
Password manager is a great idea. Digital Guardian did a sample of 20,000 accounts, and on average, about 130 online accounts to every email address for U.S. For U.S. citizens, right?
Uh-huh.
So with that said, you know, most people don't use a password manager. That means they are remembering the same password or modifications of that password for all of those accounts. If a bad guy is able to decipher one, they pretty much are into all of those accounts. So with a password manager, you can assign random passwords. You don't have to remember this, memorize anything. You're using it across multiple platforms, multiple devices, and you carry it with you. You can put it on your phone, your tablet, your laptop. It makes it really easy to create random passwords that are very difficult for individuals to try and guess at.
Okay, because that one, even if your phone was taken or something was taken, you're the only one who knows the master
password.
That's helpful. All right, we are going to be back with Andy and Kai and on this Tech Tuesday, and we're going to learn a little more about some of the applications of the next generation of tech, dealing with your health. What about helping you sleep better and some other things that are just fascinating that are in the pipeline going to, I imagine, be available soon. Andy's going to tell us about that. Also, how you might not be using your smart speaker effectively. The smart speaker can do a lot more than we are using it for, I'm told, and we're going to find out more about that here on WGN. Anna DeVlantis here on WGN. 2:18 is the time, and we're talking on Tech Tuesday about things that help your life in the world of tech with Kai Waterman and Andy Anacone. They're two tech guys who know a lot about these different areas of cyber protection, but also what's next in tech, what the kinds of wearables that you're going to be wearing soon that can even help you sleep better. So that's coming up. Let me just say this in a second here or two, take a minute or two. Two brothers, one a star athlete, the other with special needs, how their bond inspired an effort to help lonely seniors find joy and companionship. It's tonight, special report on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock. All right, Kai and Andy, we were talking about password protection, and we had a couple people ask, what is the password manager you would suggest? Is there one in particular that you like?
I personally use LastPass, but any of the major ones.
I use Keeper, which is a local people. We've spotlighted them here on the show before, and it works fine for me. I just know your master password, and everything is out there. So there are a number of them that you could check out and see if you can get that going. But you said people should be doing that yesterday, have some type of password protection.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. All right, Andy, let's talk to you now, because you said we're not using our smart speakers correctly, and also that you've been to CES and you're on the cutting edge of new technologies and what's next that'll affect our lives. And there's some interesting stories to tell about the health sector, what's going on. Right?
Yeah, well, you know, in our line of business, we have a front row seat to the way industries are changing, all sorts of industries, whether it's air travel, whether it's consumer electronics, whether it's public safety, et cetera, and healthcare. And I thought it might be a good idea to talk through what are the new innovations coming out in healthcare. And it's not really about the technology as we know, it's about how people use the technology.
So we know about wearables, Fitbits everywhere. A lot of people have them, a lot of people love them, but you're saying there's so much more coming down the pipeline, or maybe even available now. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the three big trends we're seeing is, number one, this convergence between personal devices and healthcare devices. Once upon a time, they were totally separate. Now they're really converging. And so no longer do you have just a Fitbit tracking, but now things are pulling together and bringing in more higher level healthcare data. You also see the devices themselves getting a lot smarter. And so once upon a time, all you could do is track footsteps, and that was a great thing, and it was really helpful to people.
A lot of people
use
that.
Today, these devices can help predict issues and prevent issues, and that's a huge trend we're seeing. We'll talk about that in a second.
Uh-huh.
And then the third, they're also really helping, these devices in the home are helping medicine transform itself and bring on and usher in this whole thing of remote and telemedicine. So we can talk about that.
Okay, so you said that basically there are wearables that can help you even sleep better. They can help, they can monitor like all kinds of bodily functions. Are these available now? And then tell me what in that space what you're excited about.
Yeah. So a lot of us probably have Apple Watches and Samsung Watches and all of this, and those are good with pulse rate and EKG and whatnot. But there's some really cool new things that are even getting into tracking AFib conditions and sleep apnea.
Wow.
Sleep apnea impacts 22 million people a year, and 40,000 die. And it's very difficult to diagnose. And that kind of thing just on your wrist while you're sleeping really is a really big benefit.
Another one that I think is fascinating, you think about the really serious implications and helpful implications, are the ones that can detect changes in your behaviors and can kind of predict declines in health based on certain factors. They might let you know if a loved one, if a grandmother or somebody needs some help or doesn't seem, things are not going right before it's the big emergency call.
Yeah. There's 17 million seniors living alone today. And at a certain age, that becomes a huge risk. And there are a lot of devices, back to the point about predicting and preventing issues, there are a lot of devices, wearable devices, that are now enabling caregivers, the family members as well as physicians, to track behaviors of the seniors, understand patterns of behavior, understand diet, understand exercise, and really recognize, are you at risk for a fall? People don't realize fall prevention is an enormous issue. It's a $50 billion issue every year, and many, many people, 2 million people a year are dealing with this. So the ability to track that and clue in caregivers that so-and-so loved one is heading down a path to potentially fall is a really, really beneficial.
How would
thing.
They be able to do that? Just certain like health factors that might precede a fall, I guess? They would then send you the text message or something. I mean, tell me how that actually
would work. This is about the AI, the artificial intelligence of these devices. And so now these devices are smart enough to track behaviors and understand literally is someone wobbly and what that looks like over time. And over time, the algorithm is able to predict that because of past data, that so-and-so is likely to fall.
So where is this all going? It just seems as if they're going to be, these wearables will be able to monitor almost every bodily function, and I suppose that's extremely helpful in terms of finding things before it gets to be a really big deal.
It really is. I mean, there's another another really important product. It's a health patch. I think that's the name of it as well, and it tracks vitals, and it's a throwaway device that you have to change every so often, but it tracks vitals, and that's really important because another big cost driver and care driver is hospital readmissions. And a lot of times people may have had surgery or been treated for a chronic disease. They now come home. That's a great thing, but their health deteriorates. And but for this kind of device, you might not recognize how fast that health is deteriorating. And now you have to go back into the hospital, and it's likely too late. And now you're readmitted. It's a big cost. It's a big burden, of course, and it's a health risk for the individual. So the ability to monitor all this remotely is a really beneficial thing.
And are doctors and hospital systems buying into all this as well? I mean, you're on the cutting edge of this from the tech perspective and investing in this type of technology.
Yeah.
Is everybody embracing it?
They are. They are, but cautiously. And so some of these things require FDA approval, and that is moving in a direction. In fact, Medicare, even 2 years ago, wouldn't cover some of these in-home monitoring devices that we just talked about for seniors. And today they do, right? And so even the government is moving in this direction. Certainly physicians are. And this is, you know, most importantly, I think the insurers are really behind this because, of course, they have a benefit. They see the benefit to healthcare, but there's an enormous cost benefit as well.
There was one technology you were mentioning that was about helping firefighters. I just want to touch on that because it seems like a super cool thing that's on the horizon. I don't know if that's being used already, but tell us about that, Andy.
Yeah. And that's perhaps a whole other segment public safety. But there are there's an explosion of technologies fixing public safety as well. One of the biggest risks to firefighters is cancer. Because they go into these burning buildings and they get all sorts of, you know, they exposure to chemicals and whatnot. So there are apps that are helping track that. And there are also new apps that are literally helping, and new devices literally helping firefighters and police see through walls to recognize, are there people on the other side of the wall in a fire situation or perhaps worse, a hostage situation, things like that. Mm-hmm. But these are all on the forefront, and there's more coming.
I believe it. And then we're not using our smart speakers effectively. I mean, feel like right now, my daughter wakes up, she asks the smart speaker, what's the weather? You know, she tries to figure out what she's going to wear for school. She asks the basic question. Sometimes she asks for help with math homework. Parents are not as needed as they used to be now. You've got the smart speaker there. But it's, you know, I just wonder what is it we should be doing, or there's so much more that they're capable of, is your message, right?
Yeah, and I think we're really at the forefront of this whole technology, and I think humans need to build a new muscle memory. I think this hasn't yet been capitalized into how we think about the world. Uh-huh. And I think from the industry side, from the supply side, whether it's Amazon or Google or the other, or Apple creating these solutions, we're still at the forefront, just the infancy, but there's great promise for what these voice-enabled technologies will allow us to do.
What are you guys using it for? I mean, since you're the tech guys, is there something more that we should already be using them for?
Mea culpa. I still am really just using it for the weather and to help my daughter with the math homework,
right,
and all of that.
Right.
That's basically
Kai, what
it.
About you?
I don't allow them in my environment.
I bet. You're super cybersecurity guy, so you just know. In fact, there's something we're going to talk about later in the show. University of Chicago scientists just came up with this idea that is not released yet, but they've just been testing it and it works, of jamming smart speakers and jamming electronic equipment that records you. You just like wear a bracelet or something like that. You walk in the room. Kai, I think you need this. This is something for you. People are asking though more about the password protectors. What is the one that you use that you're not necessarily, you don't have any piece in this company or anything. You're just the one you personally use.
Yeah. LastPass.
LastPass.
Yes.
And you can just go to the App Store.
Absolutely. Google Play or the Apple Store.
Okay. Download that. And then once you get there, is it pretty easy to figure out how to do it?
It
connects to all your different sites?
Yeah. You have to create a master password. And then if you're on a PC, you can install a version for Windows or Apple. or Linux, and you can then utilize it across all your platforms. So you log in, you start transferring all of your accounts over into this manager, and when you go to a new site that it doesn't have a password for, it'll ask you, would you like to store this? And it's pretty self-explanatory.
It kind of prompts you along, so it isn't like a high-tech thing you have to do. You literally download the app, it sounds like.
That's it. That's all you do.
It starts guiding you through as you use different sites or go to different places.
That's right.
That's good to know. So LastPass is that. So 708, there you go. That's the one that you use personally. And, you know, it's interesting because when you see stories in the news of who's been hacked, you wonder, it just seems as if all of us are truly vulnerable. I mean, Jeff Bezos was hacked, right? His phone was hacked.
Right.
He's the billionaire tech company owner and very tech savvy, right? This is a guy who was somehow, I mean, you can imagine that someone like him would be more of a target because of his celebrity. But still, it seems as if a number of things we should be doing to kind of protect ourselves, right?
Absolutely.
All right, Kai Waterman, head of cybersecurity at Mercury STK, and also Andy Anacone, he's a managing partner at TechNexus. I hope you both will come back again and keep us informed of everything we need to know, because we just scratched the surface here. I know you guys know so much more, but this is all my brain can handle for this moment. But it's very helpful, so thank you. Thanks
again. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Andy and Kai. Much more ahead here on WGN, including the news at the bottom of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It is 2:32 here on WGN. Anna DeVlantis here, along with Mark Jacob. We're going to get to him. He's got this fascinating piece in Chicago Magazine, an in-depth look at how women became legal bartenders in the city 50 years ago. That's right, just 50 years ago is when it happened. But it's a great piece, and we're going to talk to Mark in a second. I just want to mention this first. The Shamrock Shake is returning to McDonald's. It's back. Tomorrow is your lucky day if you like the Shamrock Shake. I totally do. And that's coming out. And so it's been around 50 years, and we all love the Shamrock Shake. I know I do. And this year they're going to have the Oreo Shamrock McFlurry joined by the Shamrock Shake. So they're going to debut both of them tomorrow. You can check it out. Stores across the nation, McDonald's restaurants across the nation, I should say. Started in 67 by a Connecticut McDonald's owner, Hal Rosen. And has been a hit ever since. It's also National Drink Wine Day, February 18th. And wine is getting cheaper, we're told, because of an oversupply in California. And speaking of alcohol, back to the tavern story. And Mark Jacob is here. How are you, Mark?
Fine.
You are with Chicago Magazine. You write for them. But you're also working on a book, which is what led you to this story, kind of by happenstance, right? About female bartenders?
Right. I was working on a book that's just come out called Chicago Rules. It's a visual history of the Chicago Federal Court, which is celebrating its 200th anniversary this year. And so did some research for the book with my co-authors, Michael Williams and Richard Cahan. And we were down at the, I didn't even know that the National Archives had a regional office on the South Side, but it does. And it's full of just amazing treasures. While I was down there, I got to hold a court case from the 1880s with Mark Twain when he sued for copyright, for example.
Gee.
So the people there are just super good and helpful. And they pointed out this case about the bartender case from 1970. And I started reading the court transcript of a hearing. And it was this absurdly sexist exercise that the idea that it happened 50 years ago instead of 350 years ago kind of was amazing.
Well, and the taverns in Chicago are just, I mean, they're legendary in a lot of ways. I mean, they sort of anchored communities down in a lot.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had a tavern at Clark and Devon for years and years and years and years, post-prohibition time, and then for years after that through the 70s. And it just felt as if that was a gathering spot. A lot of city workers went there, and it was a spot in the community that was kind of, it held an important place, and they did. Now, we've seen a lot of taverns go away in Chicago for a number of reasons. I don't know if you follow this kind of stuff, Mark.
Right, yeah, and because areas are going dry.
Right.
Just
communities are not necessarily wanting them as neighbors, and then the after-hours stuff that goes on, and not everybody's respectful. But this look at the women, how they became bartenders, it's you did pull stuff from the actual court case.
So the deal was that there was, the Chicago Barmaid Ordinance wasn't that old. It was passed in the 50s, and it meant that a woman could only be a bartender if she was a relative of the owner, the wife, the mother, the sister, or the daughter. And otherwise, you couldn't. The women couldn't. And there was a lawsuit filed in the late 60s, and it went to the court in the 70s, and in 1970. And it was clearly an attempt to keep women out of that job, I think, to protect male jobs. I mean, back then, there was this kind of mentality that was fairly common that women should step aside to give men the jobs because they were like raising families and the women.
Or maybe they also didn't want to sort of drink with women around.
Yeah,
is that part of it?
That,
you see some golf clubs and things like that.
That's possible.
Really totally into that.
That's possible. But they banned women and they, you know, they sued. And the court transcript, the court hearing that I focus on in the piece is it's a federal judge, James Parsons. It's a city attorney representing the city because the first Mayor Daley got sued.
So he was sued. Mayor Daley was sued.
Yeah, because he's officially in charge of all that kind of stuff. And so that was just the normal course of things. He didn't have to testify or do anything,
okay.
Really.
That's how it started.
In fact, they sent the city attorney, Benjamin Novoselsky, there to make the case for them. And then also Ellis Reed, who was kind of a pretty interesting activist lawyer. He was representing the would-be bartenders.
Mm-hmm.
And Novoselsky, the city attorney, starts talking about how if you let women be bartenders, you know, they will mesmerize the customers. Some of them hypnotize them in some ways. A poor fellow would not know what he was drinking, and lo and behold, if something happens at the bar, the licensee will lose his license, but Mary can go across the street and get a job
now,
there.
What are you reading from? Is this the actual transcript from court?
Yes, this is what they said in court. And then, so the judge says, do you mean women are in the habit of mesmerizing men? And then Novoselsky says, Your Honor, be it any way, any different since time. And Parsons, the judge, the amazing thing about this is the judge suggests that if they only made women wear men's clothes, it would be okay.
Oh,
and they get
idea.
In this bizarre, Parsons says, I am slightly under the naive impression that a woman in male attire loses some of that capacity for mesmerization. And Novoselsky says, well, just wait a minute, Your Honor. And Parsons says, especially if she is shirted or tied so that the bosom is not unduly exposed nor the dress by tradition unduly suggestive.
It's amazing to think about it. The same judge was saying, oh, it might be okay if they wear trousers and shirts and ties.
And breeches.
And then they could potentially. So they were trying to work out the rules by which 50 years ago, remember, this is what we're talking about, 50
right.
years ago.
But it's all predicated on the idea that women are dangerous creatures,
you know,
that men don't have any kind of self-possession or control over themselves, and that women will mesmerize them. And that attitude, again, I guess I was most shocked by the idea that it was only 50 years ago.
Yeah, that is the part that sort of surprised you, because I didn't know it was illegal for a woman to be a bartender 51 years ago. That just struck me as sort of interesting, but I think the cast of characters involved in all this, the county court system and the mayor and the people representing the, I guess, the Tavern Owners Association. So what was the stance from the tavern owners at the time? Were they split on this, or were all of them pretty much?
I think they were split on it. The group that sued was a mostly African-American Bar Owners Association. I think that the regular rank-and-file kind of white-dominated union at the time was just fine with it. I mean, it's always been a struggle in which some unions have seen it as part of their role to keep people out of their profession.
Yeah.
And I think that was what was going on there. The weird thing is that a similar ordinance in Michigan had already gone all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the ban had been upheld. So this was
the ban, meaning they still did not allow women 50 years ago
exactly.
in Michigan.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, the Chicagoans made a run at it, and Judge Parsons ultimately, after this, you know, silly discussion about whether women are going to wear trousers
or ties,
he ends up saying that the ban is a violation of the 14th Amendment, equal protection under the law, and he lifts it. And so then, ever since then, women have been allowed to become bartenders, and 47% of unionized bartenders in Chicago now are women.
Do you get the sense, though, that there were a lot of women working in the taverns then? It just sort of illegally? Were they cracking down on this sort of thing 52 years ago?
It's interesting because the photo that that Chicago Magazine used with the piece is from before the ruling, and it's a woman pouring a drink in a bar, and it didn't say she was a daughter or wife or anything like that. So I bet it was routinely ignored, in some cases.
Yeah, I would think that it was. But you said it was illegal if you were the child or the wife
of a
tavern owner.
Yeah, which makes sense. But yeah. What struck me about this court hearing was that they just got off on so many crazy things. Novoselsky, the city attorney, for example, says that, I have no quarrel with people who like to drink. I like to drink scotch on the rocks at home, frankly. And the judge, instead of just getting back on track, says, do you really like scotch? And Novoselsky says, yes, for medicinal purposes, of course. And then Parsons says, on the rocks?
Oh, my gosh. It just is like a look back in time. And it just brings you to this moment in Chicago where that's what you mean. You make it come to life because you have these transcripts from the actual trial, which I didn't know were that easy to dig up. But you found them.
Well, they're not. No. I mean, this had not been published before. And it's just, digging around in old records, which people don't do that often.
Yeah, they don't, because it's hard to do. Mark, tell us about your book before we let you go. And thank you for being here. What's the book?
The book is called Chicago Rules, and it's our attempt to look at about 120 of the most famous court cases in the Chicago Federal Court in the 200 years that it's been going on. And there's some great cases. There's Jack Kerouac, the beat poet, is his story he wrote in a University of Chicago literary magazine was held by the Postal Service, and they wouldn't put it out. This was back in the, I believe, the 50s. There's, there's cases involving Alexander Graham Bell and Mark Twain, and so we tried to find kind of new pictures and new drawings. There's even cases about, who owned the land, right here downtown, an attempt by one of the early settlers to try to reclaim land.
So you get into this kind of detail.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It's like quick, like few paragraphs to explain each case, and then we find kind of old pictures and drawings that have not been known.
Well, you're a great writer, so I'm excited to see the book. Chicago Rules is what it's called, and Mark Jacob is the author, who's also got this cool piece in Chicago Magazine about female bartenders, if you want to check that out. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. We've got more coming up, including trending topics here on WGN, including that story about the Chicago University of Chicago scientists who have figured out a way to jam smart speakers, and it's their new discovery that's making news today. Also, why they're sending candy and cheese to space. We're back with trending topics. Steve Bertrand has come into the studio here on WGN at 2:45. So is Lauren Lapka. And you guys, are you excited about the Shamrock Shake?
I am. I'm a big fan.
Tomorrow's your day. I'm going to go get one.
Okay.
I love the Shamrock Shake. I do, too.
You're going to start your day with the Shamrock Shake?
Well, I don't know. I got to get around there, because I do like them.
You ever have the after-dinner drink, the Grasshopper? It's the same thing.
Yes. Good. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites.
Right.
So they're like the Andes mints, right? That's kind of what they do.
Yeah, creamed mint to your McDonald's.
And get one of those. Get a Shamrock Shake and the Girl Scout Cookie Thin Mints. Put them all together, right, and you'll be minted out for the day.
I know someone who's selling the Thin Mints.
Someone I know.
I did officially buy a box last week.
Thank you.
You guilted me into it.
I guilted everyone here. Thank you very much for doing that. It's helping my daughter in some way. We're not sure, but it is helping her. The Oreo Shamrock McFlurry is also out tomorrow, so that's something for you to look for. That's a new one. They make it kind of minty, the McFlurry, but the Oreo. It's all working. Former Amazon executive reveals he switches off Alexa when he wants a private moment. He told the BBC, this Amazon executive, that, if it's a personal conversation or sensitive conversation, I go over and I find the smart speaker and I turn it off.
Probably not a bad idea.
Last year, Amazon was forced to admit that some conversations were recorded by a virtual assistant and they were listened to and transcribed by humans. So that's just part of what's going on in the world.
Do you guys use yours very much?
All the time.
Really? To do what? To order things? Or
weather, mostly. Just kind of, what's the weather right now? What's the weather this weekend? Kind of what's going on? My daughter asks for help with homework sometimes.
Really?
Who is the second president? Who's the 10th president?
Isn't that kind of cheating?
Yeah, kind of is. You're supposed to do that yourself.
It's like
you're
having your mom sell the Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah. I thought it all started out great. I was not going to be selling the Girl Scout cookies.
That's not working harder. That's working smarter.
Thank you. Thank you, Lauren. Now I feel better, even though I still don't feel great about the whole not selling the Girl Scout cookies door to door
thing.
Alexa,
sell my Girl Scout cookies.
Yes, maybe I could ask the smart speaker for where the best place to go and
not
be cold.
Who needs a thin mint?
Where are the most Thin Mints sold in the Chicago zip code of 60642? Please let me know. University of Chicago scientist builds a bracelet that jams microphones on smart speakers like Alexa and Siri. And so if you're wearing this, this is just announced that there's basically these sort of, you put them on your, it's like a bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called a bracelet of silence. And it has 23 speakers around it that emit ultrasonic signals, and it'll drown out the speech of anywhere. You can't hear it, but it emits these sort of signals. And then it's, if that's what you want to do, you can drown out these. They can't understand, hear, or record what you're doing.
Okay, so how do they prove to me it's working?
Yeah, that's true. How do you
These are University of Chicago scientists.
Right?
I would trust them. They say it's like 97% effective in jamming devices.
I was going to say, so I guess at least with an iPhone or a smartwatch, something like that, you could probably prove it if you are recording, if you use the app, the record. If you try to do that and speak into it while this bracelet is on, that
then
would be one way.
It would record you?
That would be one way to test it in mine.
I'm just thinking of the guy selling potions out of the Wizard of Oz, out of the back of the
wagon.
Come
on, this is U of C, Steve. Stop being so critical. I think that's going to work. I think that'll be a hit. I'm not sure what all the applications are, because I think if you have a smart speaker in your own home, you kind of know it's there. But when you go everywhere else...
Yeah, but it's not exactly fashionable. I don't know how many people really want to be wearing that thing if you've seen it. It's like really big.
It's ginormous. Yeah. With a lot of little blinky lights on it kind of thing. it'll get trimmer. We'll see. There's an electronic sniffing dog that's helping in Lake County. Did you hear about this little guy? Browser.
Oh, yeah. He just had a big bust, right?
Yes. Busted a big, like a cybersecurity, like a theft ring of, they were stealing people's identities. And he can detect like a flash drive, a phone, a hidden electronic device.
Just like a 7-year-old.
In a bag or anywhere you go. And like you can bring him in cushions, in closets, anywhere. Airports, stuff like that. They can, there's a chemical apparently on the circuitry.
Dogs are amazing.
Aren't they? Every day we learn something
they can
new.
Do.
Astronauts are amazing too, and they're sending candy and cheese to the space station because they have cravings up there in space. That's what's happening. The capsule left the Virginia, or I guess they left Tuesday, so they're off, and they're going to send Skittles, hot tamales, and Mike and Ike's.
But not a McFlurry.
Nope, that wouldn't
Shamrock Shake.
Travel.
No.
Although I have had the astronaut ice cream at the Museum of Science and Industry.
I've gotten those down at the Kennedy Space Center.
The Neapolitan one?
Did right.
It's not bad.
What?
It's not bad. You haven't had it?
No.
The space ice cream?
No.
Comes in a bag. It's freeze-dried. I think it's pretty good, but it doesn't taste like
it. It's like eating a dry marshmallow.
Yeah. That's exactly it. That's it.
I don't know how I feel about that.
They're also sending cheddar and Manchego cheeses, fresh fruit and vegetables.
This is the year of Manchego cheese, I think. You know, certain foods.
You do see it everywhere.
Like kale had its moment or whatever, or acai berries. The Manchego cheese is everywhere.
Yeah, people are reminding me you can sell your Girl Scout cookies at pot dispensaries. Mm. Yeah, I saw that. We talked about that. Right now, we're just selling them in the WGN break room, and that's going great.
Well.
So why not? Why change what's working? All-female crew to broadcast and produce NBC sports coverage of the Blues Blackhawks in honor of International Women's Day.
I saw that. I was very excited about that. Kendall Coyne will be the ringside reporter.
Her.
But that's really exciting. I don't think you've ever seen that in sports, let alone hockey. It's not an easy game to call, let me tell you.
No, it's a very difficult, as you know, from our own experience here, we have the greatest of the great, but this is going to be, that's going to be a pretty cool thing. One of its kind broadcast.
Yeah, got to tune in for that.
First of its kind. Local lawmaker is trying to undo a new license plate tax that was just done by state legislator January 1st. The trailer license plate went into effect. You see this? It was $18. It shot up to $118. And this isn't for the big trailers. Those only went up 6%. This is for those little bitty trailers behind that you
Things
pull.
Things that you're pulling?
Yeah. Just
like if you want to move a couch?
Something like that. You know, you put something on, you have to, you know, haul something behind your car. $18 to $118 for the smallest class of trailers. So he's trying to undo that. Wendy Williams, and not the passenger, the airline passenger, because you have to like qualify that now. This is Wendy Williams, the talk show person, appears to mock the death of Drew Carey's ex-fiance with a Price is Right joke. Here's, and she's taking heat for that. We've got some audio here.
I'll give you a little backstory. So she was killed not by Drew, but by the ex. Come on down.
Oh. didn't go over well. But obviously, when you're talking about someone's terrible passing, that was not a joke that people really appreciated.
Does anyone really? Does she have an audience anymore or
I
ever?
No, she keeps having negative headlines. Things that she's been saying,
which I think sometimes is a tactic, isn't it? When you just try to attract attention by doing things like that,
or you fall down. Remember, she fell down, passed out.
Yeah, she kind of makes a scene moment.
I wouldn't even call it experience because we never found out what it was.
No.
There's also this guy's ice volcanoes explode along Lake Michigan and ice balls along the shoreline. They've got some things going on up in Michigan. Holland State Park is where this story was from, where they've got these round chunks of ice lining the shoreline.
Yeah, we used to have a house in Saugatuck, so right there, just south of there.
Not far.
And it was the coolest things. They're like little cannonballs, and they would form. I don't know exactly how they form, but then they would, it'd be like just a whole shoreline of these little cannonballs.
Huh.
Very cool.
Yeah, and they say the ice volcanoes, where they just sort of erupt, the water from bubbles up from underneath in another spot not too far from there. Grand Rapids Weather Center is showing that out on social media. They've got video of them, so it's kind of cool if you want to check that out. New dog collar swears every time a dog barks.
It's amazing.
It's amazing what they have. Isn't it $60? The cuss collar, it's aptly named. You just put it around the dog's neck. And it spits out a swear word every time your dog barks.
Who
currently
thinks of these
currently
things?
Sold out, by the way.
Oh, I bet.
Very popular. Oh. But the pre-recorded words, they have them on there, and you can guess what they are, or you can enter your own. That's what you do. I wonder if that really works. Does the dog kind of respond?
How long until it gets old, though? You know.
Yeah,
you really listen to
depends on how much your dog barks.
Some dogs, they don't care. They just that's their thing.
Put it on to let them outside, so whoever's walking by, that would be entertaining.
Right.
Not in the house, maybe.
No, not in the house. Then there's this, too, guys. You see, Bloomberg is under fire because of how the 3,000 journalists who work for Bloomberg get to cover the boss, and some questions have come up. Remember, they announced that they weren't going to dig into his personal life, his family, or his foundation. Well, now a number of people are coming up to say, hey, are you still doing that? Is that the rule? And the employees say they're awfully confused. Some off-the-record political reporters at Bloomberg say there's a memo that was put out, and it left them kind of feeling like they're going to be criticized if they do cover their boss in any significant way. They did make the deal that they're not going to cover any of the other Democrats either in that way. But I just don't know why you do that.
It's a tough situation.
Well, it's covering your boss, so anything you'd say would sort of be scrutinized in a certain way, and you might feel uncomfortable. But to have sort of that blanket rule feels, that's not what news organizations are supposed to be about.
Mm-mm.
That wraps up Trending Topics. Thanks, guys. And we're going to move on and talk to Rokan, top of the hour, see what's coming up on his show, and then get the news. Also, lots of news going on in the Chicago area today, including the news about Governor Blagojevich, former Governor Blagojevich, and being commuted by President Trump. That's coming up, and much more here on WGN.